Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Sunday, September 25th, 2011. I'm Sam Minter. Yvonne Bo is here. Hello, Yvonne.
Hello.
And as has been the case the last few weeks, Alex is...
We have our guest star, Dr. Alex. Alex, you know, Alex the magician. Alex the musician.
At least this time it's just him and not him fighting with the dog. But, well, not fighting. I should say playing. But
playing with the dog.
We'll see. That may change. Anyway, we have an exciting jam-packed show. Unlike last week where we were struggling for topics, this week I had like a plethora of topics that on my list. And our agenda today, we're going to talk about Netflix and Quixtar. We're going to talk about Facebook and their most recent round of changes and announcements. We're going to talk about the Republican race, but specifically in the context of straw polls and what they may mean, but also a little bit about just the dynamics of the race in general and what's happening right now. And then the Troy Davis execution. So that's the plan. So let's get started. So
how was your weekend, Sam? Anyway, give it your move and everything. How acclimated are you first?
Well, first of all, we're not done. So, like, this weekend is the push to finish everything, because we have to be completely out of that old house by the 30th. So we've got 5 days left.
Okay.
But this is the last weekend day. We're recording this on a Sunday. See, there comes the dog. Anyway, this is the last weekend day, so as soon as I am done with this podcast, we're going and picking up a truck again. And going to try to get the last stuff out of the old house. Yes, I know. And so this is the last big push. And basically, if it's not all done by the end of the day today, then I'm going to end up having to take some days off later in the week to finish it. You know.
Okay.
But the hope is, at the very least, everything that requires a truck happens today. The last of the furniture and stuff like that. We got most of it already, but there are a few little things left. I should mention one other note since you're asking me questions like that. I almost posted the pic, but I haven't yet, and maybe I will soon. But we are once again at one of those tension-filled moments where we are waiting to find out if the Saturn will go for any longer.
Oh! What happened?
About a week ago, actually, I was driving home, and the last couple of miles home, it started making a really loud noise, and it was sort of like cluck 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 cluck, you know, really loud, like something stuck in a
car talk.
Yeah, like something stuck in a fan or something, and so I managed to make it the 1 mile home, and I parked it, and then we just sort of like we're busy, so we didn't have time to deal with it. I poured some oil into it, because the thing burns oil, and I'm like, oh, maybe it's low again.
Sure, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, so I poured, like, you know, three things of oil in it. Okay. And we basically left it a week before even trying to run it again.
Yeah.
And then we were going to, like, take it to the shop. Mm-hmm. And I got in, and we were thinking about, like, just having it towed to the shop. But, like, I got in the car, and I'm like, I'll at least get it out the driveway. And I backed it up, and it wasn't making the noise anymore. It was a very low, like, the noise had been extremely loud. Now it was kind of soft. So I'm like, it's like two miles to the shop.
You're a genius.
There you go. It's like 2 miles to the shop. We'll just drive it to the shop. So I drove it to the shop, and I could make the noise happen softly by revving it above about 2,500 RPM. And if I continuously went, like, over 40 miles per hour, it would get a little louder, you know. But, like, in real life, who goes above 40? I don't know. Anyway.
Well, not if you're driving in the city a lot. Not a lot.
My commute is highway. But anyway. So we took it to the shop. They looked at it for, like, 1 second and were like, yeah, you need a new engine. my goal at this point was just to make it to November, because November is the next round of stock grants and stuff, and
okay.
You know, so figure if
well,
we make
you're,
it to
you're close. I mean, you're close. I mean, you know what the heck? You've got AAA and stuff, right?
Yeah. Yes. So anyway, they said, look, you know, you can probably make this thing, you know, keep going for a little while longer, you know, dump the oil out completely and replace it with like the heaviest oil you can get. Like
yep,
50
like
weight oil or something like that.
Like the plan.
Okay. And so the guy who looked at it is like, okay, you know, wait in here and then tell the manager guy what you want done and blah, blah, blah. And then we waited for like 20 minutes while we waited for the guy to get done with stuff. And then they're like, we won't do that for you. You can go change your own oil or take it to Jiffy Lube or something, but we're not going to do it for you because that might imply we're fixing it.
And, oh, God. Well, couldn't he just bring out a disclaimer and say, listen, I'll relieve you of all responsibility. Just do it. Okay?
So, of course, Brandy got really pissed and like was getting really mad about this, but I'm like, okay, let's just take it to a Jiffy Lube.
Right.
I find the closest Jiffy Lube, which is like 2 miles away, and we start driving it there, and all of a sudden the noise is much louder again. And so I get to the Jiffy Lube. I pull into the Jiffy Lube, and of course they're like all looking because like this huge because this is a noise machine at this point. It's like anyway.
Okay.
Anyway, and then they're like, we don't have any really heavy oil. We just have like the normal oil.
Okay.
And so I'm like, okay, let me confer what we're going to do about this. So I back up into the Jiffy Lube parking lot, and Brandy's there in her car too. And we're like, okay, well, what do we do here? And she's like, well, you know, the way the other ones do, we should get a second opinion. Take this to another shop. Okay. And I'm like, okay. And I find another shop. I find like the closest like AAA approved shop or whatever to our house, our new house.
Okay.
I'm like, okay, let's go there. So I go to pull out of the parking lot and I go 10 feet and the car stalls. And then I go another 10 feet and the car stalls. And then I go another 10 feet and the car stalls. And then I'm like, okay, I pull back into a parking spot and I'm like, it's dead.
So it died.
Here's the thing. So we did get it towed to a shop to have them do one last look at it. And basically, they'll look at it on Monday, tomorrow. And basically tell us, look, the bottom line is, this car is dying. This car is dying. It probably needs an engine. The question is there anything at all that can be done to make it run a couple more months? Or are we done? You know? And I'm suspecting we're done. But we are going to have them give us...
How many miles are on it right now, anyway?
Like 180, something like that.
$1,080.
Something like that.
Because it's... How many years old right now?
I got it in December 95. It's a 96.
16. So 16 years.
Yeah.
Wow.
So...
Damn.
You know,
I'm going to say I drive a lot more than you do right now because my car, I'm going to take it in for my service on Sunday, so it just turned 5 years old. And I just clipped 126,000. Okay. All right. But my car's not making any of those
noises.
Not even,
yeah. So we'll see and we'll figure out what we're doing. That'll be interesting. Like the timing would have been perfect in November, but the timing now kind of sucks because we've just like spent a lot of money on moving and stuff, so we have less available for like down payments and such. One of the potential plans that Brandy is pushing is we also probably within the next few months are going to be getting Amy a car.
Okay.
Because we are finding out very rapidly that. Getting everybody to where they need to go from the new location is a major pain in the ass, and there's not convenient bus routes for her and stuff. And basically, another month, she's going to have her license. So, you know. So, what we might do, the idea that Brandy is pushing, is get her a cheap used car, except I drive it for the next couple of months until we get to November. Because she's not even going to have her license until late October.
Okay.
And then I hand that car over to Amy and get like a new car that I like in November.
Okay.
So that's the potential plan.
So what kind of car are you looking at this time?
You know, I haven't spent a lot of time looking, but the one that I've been thinking about, like, is like a baseline Subaru Impreza.
Okay, that's a good car. I like that. I like that idea. Okay.
You know,
I thought you were gonna go for like something like wacky. I don't know. I figure maybe like
a Smart or something.
Yeah, or a Fiat 500, or you know, the, I don't know, what's the other little car they come, you know, the little Ford Fiesta or something like that. There you go. You
got I don't know. I mean, we got
the little Fit. You got all these little cars. You know, we have such a much wider selection of actual small cars right now.
You know, so if you or anybody listening has suggestions for me, I'm open to hearing ideas. Like, I haven't actually test driven an Impreza. It just sounded okay to me. I was thinking of like an Outback or something, but then like was like, those are too much. I want to go on the cheap end. So,
yeah, but don't you have already like a station wagon type?
Brandy's car is a station wagon, so.
Right. So I figured that you would get something that was a little bit more, you know.
I like small. Like, I don't like big. I like cheap. I don't like expensive.
I will admit, I am kind of partial right now. I like that little Ford Fiesta. Okay. All right.
Mm, really? Okay.
I like it. It looks really cool.
I think my mom has got that.
It's got a whole bunch of
maybe she has a Focus.
Maybe she's got a Focus, but I like the Fiesta's smaller. But it's got four doors. It's very roomy. It's nice. It's peppy, and it's cheap. And not only is it's
to be clear, I want cheap, but I don't want a piece of crap. I want something that'll last me another 15 years.
It's value cheap, is what I'm saying. I mean, it's economically priced. But you get a whole bunch of bang for your buck. Okay.
Okay.
So I would say go take a look at it. Okay.
Okay, well, on that note, we've used up a first segment. Let's take a break, and we'll come back, and then we'll talk about Netflix. So,
then we'll talk.
Yeah.
All right.
We'll be back after this exciting message. Okay, Netflix. Yeah, so they did some stuff.
I don't know, what are they, you know, as HB fired, I don't know, those are tidbit news this week, that HB, you know, after the wacko CEO went berserk, the board went and, like, fired the CEO and hired Meg Whitman. So I guess that the Netflix CEO decided to pull up, I think as we can call it now, we can use it as a pull a nail. He went and he goes, oh, well, first he raised prices on everybody, and everybody got pissed off, and they've lost a whole bunch of business, right?
Yep.
So then he says, well, we didn't really explain our position first, so we need to do better. We didn't just really mean to raise prices. We really meant to tell you that we're getting out of the DVD business, period. Then we're going to split it up into two companies, and that, you know what, basically Netflix will only be streaming right now, period. Is that pretty much what happened?
That's it. I mean, well, and Quixtar, the new company, well, it's so at the moment they were just doing it, it's going to be a subsidiary, right? And then there was talk about maybe they'd sell it at some point, but the subsidiary Quixtar would handle all the by mail business, and they would separate out everything as well. Like, they really would be separate businesses. Like, you couldn't keep a queue that was shared between the two. You'd have separate bills. You'd have, you know, they'd be run completely and totally separately. Separate websites, separate logins, separate, you want a movie, you have to go look in both places.
But that's what I thought was bonkers. I mean, they completely lost their mind. I mean, I understand you trying to move away and, like, to improve your model and technology, but you got a brand that's called Netflix. It has been known for the DVD delivery business. And, you know, and the other
and
problem—
And correct me if I'm wrong, that's still the bulk of their income,
correct.
Right?
It's the bulk of their income, and not just that. It's just that online, they only have about 20% of the library available—
Yes. DVD. And that's a critical thing. Like, one of the things that was a strength of Netflix was exactly that they did have both. If you wanted a movie, you know,
and
Netflix would have
if
that thing had ever been released on DVD, pretty much, Netflix would have it. You know, and they might have it available for streaming, but they definitely have it available on disc.
Exactly.
You know,
And they've decided to completely blow up a business model
that's been working. And the other thing about it that doesn't make sense is that, you see, this was like Blockbuster that didn't have like the next generation model there, and so therefore we're beholden to the old one. So what if you milked the DVD business for the rest of the time and people started migrating to online, and then people started ordering less and less DVDs and you started making more of your revenue the other way? No, this guy decided to go freaking throw a grenade into the middle of the business, break it up, and make everybody basically unhappy.
Now, the argument that he made, you know, was basically, look, businesses have failed in the past by failing to react and switch quickly enough when the new business came up.
That is totally true. That is totally true. However, businesses also that have been successful, what they've done is that they've milked. You see, you've got this business cycle where you've got new businesses to grow, you've got businesses that are in a mature stage, and you've got businesses that are in a decline, and then you get away. Okay, all right? And you just basically milk them for whatever money is worth until they die. The one thing about it is that if you look like, for example, you could have continued milking this business up until, you know, whatever cash loaned it away and created the new business at the same time. The problem that most businesses have is that they think that, they keep forgetting and not, you know, it's like Blockbuster didn't understand that they were in an entertainment delivery business, not in the videotape business. Okay, all right? And they thought that was it. It was videotape rental, not delivering entertainment, and so therefore they focused on being so efficient at that they didn't look at what the next business model was. Well, look, if you've got a business that makes a lot of money, you can use the cash flow from that operation to fund your new venture. And yeah, as that business fades away, you go and, like, you just de-emphasize it. You shift your resources to the other one, and that's it. This that he's doing is stupid.
Well, here's the thing. Like, even if this was eventually going to be what they do, well, first of all, I think it's crazy to complete. Yes, thank you for bringing me my shoes. Thank you. Anyway, even if you were eventually going to do it, I think separating them like that is stupid to begin with for the reasons we've talked about. It's like, yeah, the convenience of having it all in one place was their big advantage.
Yes.
But, you know, the way that they did this was so clumsy and so off-putting to people. And
Right. You've
got people who maybe were very, very loyal Netflix people.
No, Daddy.
Yes, I know. I'm talking right now. Say hi.
Hi.
Oh, now he's hiding. So, yeah, you've got people who are very, very loyal to Netflix who are now looking for the exits and looking for alternatives.
Right.
You know, and not only that,
and they would not have looked out for them otherwise. That's reality.
But the thing is also that the people who are... Yes, Alex. The people who are most affected by this are the people who are your movie nuts, who are really, really, you know, who use the system heavily, use both the streaming and the discs, and guess what? Those were your best customers.
That's right.
Those were the customers who went out and told their friends about how awesome Netflix was and how you had
to
get it.
That's exactly right. And then you alienated all of them. Fucking genius.
Yeah, I mean...
Oh, what the hell? Oh, man.
Because that's exactly who you want to piss off if you're going to piss off some of your customers, you know?
Right, exactly. I just find it amazing that we've had, like, in such a short span of time, two major business leaders basically, in the last couple of months, alienate their core audiences by not thinking of what the hell, who they're serving, or just seems like even, like, talking about it. I don't know. That's what it just seems like to me. So, very weird.
Yeah,
I mean,
at the moment, we're still Netflix subscribers, and I guess we'll be Netflix and Quixtar subscribers for the short term. But, you know, I don't know. We'll definitely be reevaluating. I mean, because here's the bottom line, by the way. You know, we've been paying, you know, given our actual usage of Netflix, both in terms of discs and in terms of streaming, it's not worth what we've been paying. Yeah, you know, because we had a plan. We had like a 4-disc plan that came with free streaming, and now it's a 4-disc plan plus a streaming charge, and then those will get separated and blah blah blah. And you know,
right.
And who knows if Quixtar will still let you have four... we have four discs with four queues. Who knows if Quixtar will continue that, blah, blah, blah. Because Netflix tried to do away with that a couple years ago. We don't, like, if I actually sit down and think about it, we don't use it enough to make it worth it. We might as well, like, you know, buy these movies, you know, or at least, or get them from another source or, you know, whatever. And so this makes us think about it, whereas otherwise it's just like...
You wouldn't have been thinking about it at all, exactly.
Right, it's just, you know, if the bill gets paid automatically, we don't think about it, we use the service. Now all of a sudden we're like, oh, is this still worth it?
Daddy. Yeah.
Okay.
Let's no sense whatsoever.
Yeah. Let's take a break. It's time for your poem of the week, and we'll be back, and we'll talk about the straw polls. And Alex wants to give me his train and show it to me. Oh, and is the problem that the train's off? There we go. Okay, we'll take a break. We'll be right back after this.
This is the Curmudgeon's Corner Poem of the Week. Brought to you by Notel Motel.
Connect the Dots by Joseph Ross. If a man wakes in Yemen with shoes under his bed and eats breakfast with luggage, then buys a one-way ticket from the bearded waiter to summer in Baghdad, also he can send an email which causes a rustling of the palm trees above the heads of three men who will pray three Fridays from now in a mosque without their shoes that is near an ATM, which a young girl's father used in 2001, and a light flashes in Langley, Virginia. But the analyst is up getting coffee and thinking of her daughter's coloring book and the various line and drawing games her daughter has not completed. Are we safe yet?
For more like this, go to notelmotel.org with a new poet each week and a new poem every weekday.
Alex, please don't jump on top of my laptop. Okay. We are back!
We're back. And according to Skype, I have two voicemails.
No.
Oh, excellent.
No.
You want to watch a DVD?
Yay, Hawk!
Yeah?
Yeah, he does!
Yeah, okay. You should ask your mom. No, you're asking me. Okay.
DVD.
But, you know, Amy stole the DVD you were watching before.
No.
DVD. Yeah, okay. Give me 1 second, Yvonne. Let me get him set up in another room.
All right.
I'll be right back. This is Sam here with an opportunity for you. Yes, you heard me right. An opportunity. For you loyal listeners of Curmudgeon's Corner, you know, every once in a while, Yvonne can't make a show. And I do a solo show. Which, you know, I think I do okay. But, you know, it's always interesting to have a second person to bounce off. And just in general, sometimes it's good to hear another voice. If you, yes, you, have some things to say about the kinds of things we usually talk about on Curmudgeon's Corner, you know, politics, current events, news, tech, then drop me a line at abelsmay@abelsmay.com letting me know. And, hey, I'll keep you in mind. And maybe ask if you can join us sometime, either on a regular show with Yvonne, if it's something particularly pressing that you maybe have an expertise on, or just, you know, hey, an opportunity to co-host when Yvonne is out. Who knows? Now, I am not guaranteeing that if you send me an email, you'll definitely get on the show, but let me know if you're interested, and I'll keep you in mind. Thanks, and now, back to the show. Okay, I'm back. Got Alex set up watching a Thomas DVD downstairs. Or actually, on a TiVo, but whatever. So,
all right.
The Republicans. There's been a lot of crazy stuff going on. There was Rick Perry got in, of course, a few weeks ago, and he was riding high in the polls. Then he was in a few debates that didn't go that well. And apparently the last one, which I have not watched yet, but the last one didn't go that well, went really badly, apparently, by a lot of reports. And so he's starting...
What exactly happened? I mean, what was the reports?
Basically...
I saw one thing where he got into a whole bunch of problems because of some of his immigration policies.
I
was reading about that.
Yeah, there are a number of things. One, like, he's actually more liberal on immigration policies than the Republican base wants right now. So, for instance, he's...
Right.
In favor of, you know, the one of the cases that comes up in these policies is people who are brought over illegally as small children.
Right.
And so
he was in favor of giving
education credits. Yeah.
To children of illegal immigrants. Heaven forbid, you know, let's face it, they weren't brought over here, you know, they didn't come here by themselves. And so, I mean, his argument is like simple. It's like, okay, they're living in the state, they're probably paying some taxes that they would person, especially if you think about a state like the state of Texas, where there's no state income tax. So, you know, the taxes that people pay for the state are what? Sales taxes, property taxes, that kind of stuff, which basically you would pay whether you're renting a place or anything, whatever. So they're taxpayers to the base. And so, you know, his argument was like, well, it's not their freaking fault. Why should they be denied an education?
Right. So that was one thing. Also, apparently on some other issues, he was just getting facts wrong. He was flustered on some other things. I saw people criticizing him because, like, there was a back and forth with Romney, and Romney actually was criticizing Perry for being a flip-flopper rather than the other way around. And, you know, apparently he just didn't seem like he was fully engaged. He seemed a little flustered, you know, things like that. And basically, you know... just didn't seem like he was on his game, and didn't seem like he had a good grasp on the issues, and wasn't able to respond quickly to criticisms, because of course everybody was piling up on him because he's the front runner, and that kind of thing. So he's been dropping in the polls again, and
But let's see. So basically, right now what we've discovered is that the two leading Republican candidates have. Apparently, one is too soft on immigration, right? And the other guy basically passed a health care bill like the one Obama passed, right?
Yes.
So, I mean, okay, how's this going to fly?
Look, you know, the more I look at this, the more I'm like, you know, it's going to be wrong. We're gonna have all this is the same dynamic we had when we were talking about McCain. You know, basically there's nobody that everybody is happy with, and so at some point you just come back to, well, okay, I guess it's Romney.
Tea parties, so what would happen? I think that a possible scenario that could happen.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I kept thinking about this. What if the Tea Partiers decide to split off and get their own candidate?
That would be so much fun. And maybe that's Sarah Palin.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's been biding her time. I don't know. There's still obviously a lot of dynamic stuff here. And the topic here for this segment was going to be the straw poll business, because after all this decline by Perry, there was a straw poll in Florida. And now, to be clear, these straw polls are not like real elections. People pay to vote in these.
Right, these are just ridiculous. I mean, these fucking straw polls. I mean,
But the Godfather's pizza guy, Kane, who is...
Kane!
Who is
polling at like the 0.001% nationally?
Well, he's actually a little higher than that, but yes, everyone regards him as one of the joke candidates.
He may have a percent or two higher than that. Okay, all right, maybe he's got 1% or 2.
Uh huh.
You're actually going to look him up, because I was going to look up.
You could tell from the pause.
First, let's see. Okay, where the hell is he? Herman Cain's poll numbers. Here we go. Let's see. All right. The computer. Come on, computer.
computer.
You gotta love technology.
Where the hell? Come on. Let's see.
I got a
of course. Yeah. You got the numbers.
No, I got a nice little spinning wheel.
Oh, you got a nice. let's see. Romney. Here we go. Okay. Let's see. I'll look up. I got Texas 2012 president Perry 49%, Romney 10%, Gingrich 8%. Oh, for God's sakes, now I got a freaking commercial. Oh, no.
Yeah, I had a really good chart of this.
No. Why a commercial? I don't care. I don't care about the American Jobs Act. Thank you. Okay, go. All right. Let's see. Kane, Texas, 7%.
7%. See, there you go. That's more than 0.0001.
Okay, that's more than 0.001. Yes, he is beating Santorum, who's got 3%, Huntsman, who has 2%, and Johnson, who has 0. I'm guessing it's like the 0 points. He's okay. All right, 7%.
Yes. Okay, so another place that has a good chart here, if this is what I think it is. Yeah, here we go. RealClearPolitics.com.
Okay.
And in their left menu, you'll see a Republican National Polls, and they have a nice little chart with all the candidates on the Republican side on National Polls. They have Kane at 5.6% right now. But Perry had peaked at like 33% or something like that, and is now back down to 28. And Romney at 20 right now. Anyway, it's chaotic over there. You still at this late date, you have people talking about more people jumping in. You have people talking Christie. You have people talking about Palin. And Palin had promised, by the way, to decide what she was doing by the end of September. Although I hear recently that she said, well, maybe October. and she sent out her PAC sent out an email. Apparently this week, saying Sarah Palin's trying to decide whether she wants to run for president, so send her some money to help her decide.
Sam, I think that we're approaching this the wrong way. Why don't we ask people to send us some money so we can decide what we want to do?
You know, I've got many things that I need to decide.
Yes! I think that some people should send us some money for us to be able to decide on a few of the things that we've got pending.
Yeah, I mean, I think for, right after I get out of here, we're going to go pick up the rental truck. But along the way, we will probably stop for, coffee or something. And I need to decide what flavor.
Yes, and Sam wants you to send a donation to, you could, AppleSmay at AppleSmay.com.
Yep, you can PayPal it. I'm good with that.
PayPal will be good, and he will take your donations in order to help him decide what kind of coffee he should have.
Exactly.
Yes. I think that that's a sensible thing to do.
Anyway, so Kane won this straw poll. Nobody is taking it seriously that all of a sudden he's the front runner or something. But it was a real shock to Perry. Romney wasn't even running, really, and he still did okay in the straw poll. Basically the Perry campaign is like reeling from a week or, maybe even 2 weeks of... bad reviews, bad performances in debates. It's unclear whether this is affecting his fundraising. It probably is. And we'll see where we go. You look at these graphs on the Real Clear Politics site, and it's just all over the place.
The beautiful thing about this one is also that Rick Santorum gained 10.9%, beating Ron Paul, Newt Gingrich, and Michelle Bachmann only got 1.5.
Oh, on the straw poll. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know.
This is all depressing. Like the latest debate also had some high points that have been talked about. Like there was a question asked from one of the things was a potential topic for today that didn't make the cut is the final end of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And at this debate, a gay soldier asked a question about Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and the crowd booed him. you know, when he came on the screen. And you know, none of the candidates said anything about it. They just, I think it was a question to Santorum, and Santorum did his sort of typical kind of answer. But, and you know, they're just, in general, they're all kinds of, I don't know, these debates make me sad. Because, like, they're so, like, you know, you have, like, Huntsman is actually a reasonable, moderate Republican who, like, seems like he has a grasp on reality, but he's at 1.4%.
Got no shot.
Right. You know?
Got no shot.
And then you got people like Perry, who's apparently, you know, essentially George W. Bush with even less brains.
Right.
You know? And
we never thought that could be possible.
And then you have Romney. And, you know, Romney actually, like, you know, his actual record in government is actually fairly moderate and reasonable.
Yeah,
but he's running away from that completely in an attempt to win here and trying to prove that he can, you know, be just
be as crazy as everybody else.
Yeah, and so that gives lots of confidence. he's one of the ones where you hope, you look at him and say, well, you know, look, he's one, if he was actually elected president, he would revert to the normal him. And you think that, and I remember 4 years ago, we were talking about the same kind of thing about McCain. Like, he's moving to the right to try to win the nomination, but, you know, if was actually elected, he'd be more moderate. Because he's really more moderate. That's what his record says.
Right.
Yeah, and maybe you could say that about but on the other hand, you have George W. Bush campaigned as a moderate Republican.
Well,
it was all compassionate conservative, and he campaigned on his record of working well with Democrats in Texas and all of these other things. When you look at
and then September 11th happened, obviously, and then, well, that, you know, and then we had Darth Vader as the vice presidential candidate, and
yeah,
you know,
I mean, so you never know. I mean, like, and honestly, before September 11th, I mean, one of his signature accomplishments was, you know, working with Ted Kennedy on the No Child Left Behind stuff.
Right.
Which,
right,
say what you want about No Child Left Behind, it was something where he worked with Democrats to get it done.
That's right. And then after that, you know, it was all, you know, whatever.
Anyway, the Republican race is still crazy. You still got the and you still have the nut jobs in the Republican Party still having decent performance in the polls. I mean, Bachman's faded a little bit, you know, because Perry came in, but I don't know. I still have to feel.
But I don't know. I just, Bachman's getting, like, come on, Bachman's getting 7.7%.
Yes.
I mean, you know,
she's faded. There was a point in July where she was heading, you know, getting stronger and stronger and stronger, and then that was over. You know, but I still gotta believe, though, that at some point, that, you know, the process of saying, you know, we want somebody who's conservative, but we also want somebody that can win, will bring people back towards, you know, somebody like Romney. Like, if you look at the polls versus Obama, you know, they're all closer than they used to be because the economy is so bad. But, you know, Romney's the closest. Romney's the one that, like, some polls actually have him winning. You know, everybody else is a little bit behind, you know, but, yeah, I got to feel like they got to go back. But I think 538 pointed out that one of the historical trends, if you look at sort of how extreme political candidates are, is based in part on how long they've been out of power. So, like, if in an election cycle where, you know, the party's only been out of power one term, like, which is the situation we're on right now, they are the most likely to nominate somebody who is more extreme. And this happens on both the Republican and Democratic side. But once a party has been out of power 2, 3 or more terms, then they're much more likely to nominate somebody middle of the road who can actually win. But when they've only been out of power one cycle, that's the time where it's most likely that they'll be like, oh, what the hell? Let's nominate a Perry or a Bachman or, you know, somebody who's, you know, at the extremes of the purity of, you know, the base of the party, but who has relatively little chance of winning. Also, part of that dynamic, of course, is how well you think, what do you think the chances are anyway? Like, if you have a really, really strong incumbent that you don't really think you're going to win anyway, you kind of say, oh, what the hell, let's throw up our ideological standard bearer, you know? But if you've got a weak incumbent, and because of the economy, we've got a weak incumbent right now, you normally want somebody who can win, but we'll see. Okay, let's enough about this. Let's take a break, and we'll be right back after this. And let's talk really briefly about Troy Davis, because I think we had that extra segment about my car, so we're actually out of time, but we'll do that real fast. We'll be right back after this.
What do you get when two housewives produce an online poetry journal? Poems celebrating dishwater, breastfeeding, and lunar faces? Quick trips to the pool boy? Eh, maybe. But they like to believe they offer much more than that. There's no telling what you'll get at the No-Tell Motel. But I hear sneaking out and keeping everything hush-hush is kind of sexy. And they're hot for discretion. Having it all keeps our two housewives awfully busy, so they like to stop and smell the posies. Spend quality time with their poets, which is why their rendezvous lasts a full 7 days, a new poem each weekday. Each year they slip their room key to 52 poets and indulge in 260 poems. Their spouse's misfortunes are your gains. Meet with them daily at notelmotel.org. They'll be in room 5C, sipping the latest cocktail recommended in Martha Stewart's Living, Scribbling Marginalia.
Okay, here we are, Troy Davis. So this was a case where, bottom line, somebody, he was convicted of killing a cop, shooting a cop almost 20 years ago. Over the 20 years since then, a number of things have come up that put doubt on that verdict. A number of witnesses recanted. There were reports of somebody else confessing to it. Number of other things, nothing conclusive. And, you know, some people who've looked more detail at the case say that, you know, they're still pretty sure the guy did it. But some doubt. And so there were lots of appeals going on. The guy was on death row, used up all of his appeals over the course of years, had scheduled execution dates several times in the past. It finally came to a head this time around, and the state of Georgia did, in fact, kill him sometime this week. And there was a lot of protest and uproar because people basically saying, look, like, if there's any poster child for the kind of case where you shouldn't put somebody to death, it's this, because there are doubts out there in terms of whether this guy was even guilty in the first place.
The only reason being that, I mean, I can understand. I mean, what the point of this is just simply that, there are doubts. So why, you know, what's the hurry in this? I mean, the decision is still final. Why don't we explore them all? But all his appeals, I guess, were exhausted, and
it had gone through. He'd gotten all sorts of hearings over the course of 20 years. He had one final review by the Supreme Court just a couple hours before he was executed. So he'd gone through the process. He'd had multiple opportunities to make his case, and I guess, you know, to the folks who looked at it in detail, it just wasn't convincing enough. Just to full disclosure here, I am not in favor of the death penalty in any case.
Neither am I. I'll agree with you. So,
you know, so it's hard to present the other side adequately here. But I look at this and say, look, you know, I don't even think we should be killing guilty people who are 100% certain that they're guilty. But in the case where there is some amount of doubt. And look, I guess there's always some amount of doubt, almost always anyway. But it seems like there were enough questions raised in this case that it's exactly the kind of case you don't want to do, you know? Meanwhile, like in Texas executed somebody for, a case where they, a bunch of folks, tied up somebody behind a truck in a racially charged thing and dragged them to their death. They executed them the same day. And there's a lot less outrage about that because it was a much more clean cut. Yeah, the evidence was there. You know, there was no real doubt that it was this person. I don't think they should have killed him either. But at least in that case, you were pretty darn sure that you were in fact killing the right guy. You know, in this case, though, it seems to have been a decent amount of doubt. Like I said, I have seen some people argue that, you know, the amount of doubt is overblown here, and really when you look into details, it's pretty clear the guy did it. But I don't know. I think this is these kinds of things are tragic. It shows the worst side of the American justice system. There are very few countries left in the world that have a death penalty, and we're one of them. And it seems like we're on the wrong side of history on that.
Yeah, I know. So,
Yeah, and I don't know. It's just it's upsetting whenever you watch one of these. I mean, not watch it, but you know, I was following it as it went through in the last kind of appeals, and then to notice, okay, he's dead now, and it's like, and you know, the interviews with his family and stuff like that, and all of which were advocating the guy's innocence, and the guy's last words were, you know, basically, "I didn't do it. I'm innocent." You know, it's like, okay, well. You know, I gather everybody involved was very sure they were doing the right thing, but I don't know. Anyway, we said it would be short, and like, death penalty conversations are less interesting, and you can't go on as long if you don't have anybody arguing the other side. So
yeah, because we're totally in agreement, both of us on this. So therefore, it's just we can't really get into it, to be honest.
So if anybody listening, by the way, wants to come on and do the pro-death penalty side and advocate for, you know, killing heinous criminals, then let me know. Come on. We'll have the debate. You know, again, I'm one of the ones who is even, you know, reluctant and sort of like, I wish we hadn't actually killed bin Laden, you know?
I'm one who would have... You know, would have been, you know, I wasn't advocating killing him either. I mean, yep. Should have tried to capture him. Now, I know that, listen.
I know all the problems that would have caused.
I know all the problems that would have had. Okay, so I'm not going to avidly advocate it. But if you asked me, sending the guys in, what am I doing, you know, dead or alive, I would have said alive.
Yes.
Okay.
Anyway, that's the show. Thanks, everybody, for listening. This has been Curmudgeon's Corner, yet another week gone. Email me at abelsmay@abelsmay.com with any questions, comments, thoughts, or if you want to come in and debate the death penalty with us. And that's it. Tell your friends. Tune in next week. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.